Welcome to the M2 Woman podcast. This episode is from our M2 Woman Journey to Excellence live forum, held on the 20th of November 2020. It's brought to you by Arashiko, Piper Heidsieck, and Polynesian Spa. Okay, I want to introduce these amazing people, and then we'll get right into the questions. Please remember that you can email Jen with anything that you want to put to this panel. I'm going to start with Anahira. She's right at the top there. So Anahira is the head of culture and people for Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei Whai Rawa. Anahira is a driving force within Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei Whai Rawa, the commercial arm of the Auckland Hapū. A proud descendant of the Hapū, Anahira fosters meaningful relationships with key players to deliver real outcomes. Welcome her. We next have Sean Phillip, General Manager of People and Culture at Chorus. Sean has over 20 years human resources experience, including expertise in supporting leadership and culture, innovation and business execution strategies. He has a Bachelor of Commerce from the University of Auckland and is a seasoned senior executive, having held senior leadership roles across Australia and New Zealand, most recently as GM HR at AMP. Welcome. Please welcome him. Next up is Hayley Putaranui. And Hayley actually sent me the beautiful mihi that I started today with. Thank you, soul sister, for helping someone. And again, if I can do this, I hope it inspires others to try. Hayley is head of diversity and inclusion, people and culture at Fonterra. Becoming a mum at 17 provided the motivation to quickly graduate from law school and forge a career in law before joining Fonterra in 2015. Beyond her career, Hayley has contributed to the iwi governance roles and led parts of her iwi, Ngāti Maniapoto, treaty settlement with the Crown. At Fonterra, Hayley's role is to unlock more inclusion in all respects to lead D&I for New Zealand's biggest export company. Welcome. And finally, we have Zoe Brownlee, All Human Co-Director and ADHB Board Member. Zoe is a wellbeing and equity specialist and the co-director of All Human, a consultancy that works with organisations to foster employee belonging and wellbeing. She's also an elected board member of the Auckland District Health Board and is passionate about incorporating co-creation, indigenous models and research into wellbeing solutions to reach equal outcomes for all. Welcome, Zoe, please. Okay, so I thought we'd kick things off by each of our panellists sharing a little bit more about what they actually do in real terms in their jobs, and then also sharing some issues that they're facing in their spaces around diversity and inclusion. So do you want to kick it off, Anahira?
Yeah. Go. Kia ora tātou. Really awesome to be here today. I'm Anahira. I work for the commercial company of Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei. Hands up if you know where Ōrākei is. Yes, great. Tick number one. Has anyone heard of Ngāti Whātua? Yes. Tick, tick, everybody. I've been born and raised in Ōrākei. I've got four children, so I'm a mother of four. And I think what I wanted to talk about today is that in the industry that I operate in, which is we're a property company, so Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, if anyone knows where Spark Arena is, so we own that land. And so if you go all the way along Key Street to Les Mills, and then all the way back up towards McDonald's, and then come one block back, We're the landlords there, so we own that land. How many of you knew that? Okay, a bit less. There's something else, something new for everybody to take away today. I think the important thing is, oh, wait, here's another one. How many people have seen someone that looks like me in the property industry? Oh, a little less. I think that's what I want to come and sort of talk about today on this panel, is that as someone that's been born and bred in Tamaki Makaurau, I'm from Orake, my marae is there. I'm a mother of four, and we own a significant chunk of land in the Auckland CBD. And I work in an industry that doesn't look like me. So how then do we put things in place to ensure that my four children can walk through this town and have opportunities that reflect them? So when they walk down the street, maybe there should be more people that look like them in the property industry, more people that look like, that speak their language, perhaps in the corporate industries. And I think from a Ngāti Whātua Rākei perspective, that's a lot of the drive of what we're trying to do within our organisation, is to create partnerships that actually reflect who we are. Because I think the thing that we talk about a lot is that in terms of a business partner, we're one of your best ones, because one, our tupuna gifted this land to settle Tamaki Makaurau, that was Apihai Te Kawau. And two, we're not going anywhere because there's nowhere else for us to go. So when you think about a long-lasting and enduring relationship, it's with us. So,
how hard is it to be on your own, really, and not seeing anyone like you in this industry?
I think it's an opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity, really, to change the discussion and change the way that we operate in that industry. I'm on a property executive board here in Tamaki for the Property Council. Again, I'm the only Māori. There is a diversity push on that board, which is great for gender diversity. So there's quite a lot of women, but there's not many Māori women. Well, I'm the only Māori woman, and I'm the only Māori. So on a board of about 19, it can get a bit isolating. But I think what you do is you're able to open doors that they don't know necessarily how to walk through. So it's a real opportunity for us to change the way that those conversations are crafted and put another lens on what people don't necessarily have in the industry that we all work in.
Fantastic. So inspiring. Sean, tell us a little bit about what you do and where change is going for you guys.
Kia ora koutou katoa, a special kia ora to the chorus whānau down here in the front. Hello. My name's Sean. To try and give you a bit of a beam on the who I am and what I do, I asked my kids this morning, what do I do? So my 12-year-old said, you shuffle paper. And my 10-year-old said, hire and fire. 12-year-old boy, 10-year-old girl. So I do a little bit more than shuffle paper and hire people and fire people. I'm the general manager of people and culture at Chorus. I'll tell you what that means in a sec, but I'm going to follow the lead. How many people know who Chorus is? Hopefully more than most in the room. I'm not going to assume you know who we are, because we kind of happen in the background. But the thing that we're most proud of right now is we allowed New Zealand to continue to learn when they couldn't throughout COVID-19 because of the fast internet that comes to your house. We allowed New Zealand to continue to work when you couldn't go into the offices because of the fast internet that comes into your home. And we allowed New Zealand to continue to stay connected, especially at alert level 4 when we weren't allowed to connect to anyone other than our immediate whānau. So connect to your neighbours. Connect to the rest of your friends and more broadly to the world. So we provide the internet to Spark, Vodafone, 2 Degrees, Vocus, Contact, Stuff, and they sell it to you. The one ask from me to you all is, if you don't have fibre, please ask for it. That's the shameless plug over and done with. My role is, I like to see myself kind of driving the culture, which gets a return on one of our biggest investments in our organisation. That's our people. So we spend most of our money from a cost perspective to the bottom line in people. So we need to get a return on that investment, and that's how I see my role at Chorus.
Sean, what's the makeup of your organisation?
Yeah, so if we start with the gender lens, we're 60% male, 40% female. We've held that gender split probably since we demerged from Spark in 2011, 12, before I joined. 2012, the leadership community was 20% female, 80% male. We're now 40% female, 60% male. Then when you overlay all the ethnicity dimensions around that, we're very New Zealand European or Pākehā, but we're quite diverse in terms of have, if you looked at the stats, New Zealand stats, we've got all representations in line with that, but just not representative of what our customer base is.
How do you get more ethnicity inclusion?
Yeah, it's a great question and it's a complex one, right? So for those in HR, if you don't have good data, you're stuffed because you need to be able to understand your employee base. You need to be able to kind of benchmark yourself and figure out where you're going and then ultimately where you need to land. It's complex. So for us at Chorus, it's more about creating an inclusive culture. So we measure our success through the different barometers of gender, ethnicity, age, sexual orientation, etc. So that when we see more balance there, more like our customers, i.e. everyone in New Zealand, then we know we've kind of completed our journey around more inclusivity.
Cool, some cool stuff to work on then. Hayley, kick it off, tell me about you.
Tēnā rā tātou katoa, e rangatira mā, tēnā koutou ki ngā mana whenua o Ngāti Whātua o Rākei, tēnā rā tātou katoa, ko Tainui te Waka, ko Ngāti Maniapoto te Iwi, ko Ngāti Rora te Hapū, ko Hayley Ahau. So kia ora everybody, can we just actually take a moment to give Rachel a round of applause for her mihi, ka pai her. Part of the role that I guess I play in 2020 is that we make everyone, in one sense, feel comfortable. So when I caught up with Rachel 2 days ago, I said to her, have you got a mihi sorted? You know what, actually, probably more so than me doing a mihi, there will be people in the room that will take away today. So hopefully all of you are encouraged by, you know, again, that point around...
That was such a generous gift, actually. And, yeah, beautiful gift to share. And if there's anyone in your workplace who can share that gift so you have that presence, yeah, so wonderful.
Yeah, share them and then pay for them for it too.
She promised she wasn't selling me down the river and making me say something terrible.
So my role is, look, at the heart of it is to actually get under the people's skin. And what I'm up against is, so when you look down the back of the room, there are green men on our doors. And so it's very deliberate that they are men. When we learnt about opera, for example, in school, I didn't. But you learnt about Beethoven and Mozart. You learnt about men, basically. And so some of the conditioning, I'm not sure if any of us will know, but the air conditioning in this room has probably been tested on males. And for a female, particularly one of 42-ish vintage, I need premium conditions so that I don't start getting, my glasses fog up these days and I start getting sweating. And it's very, very, very awkward if you're trying to come across as someone very learned and everyone can see that you're fogging up. And also the other reason why, other thing that I do in my day to make people uncomfortable is probably because the biggest group of people of colour in this room today are the people serving us. So two things, when you leave the room today, please make sure that you thank every single person that's part of the team and a mihi to Chorus for having us, but they're people, and as I said, most of the people of colour and the mass people of colour in this room today will be the people serving us, and that is because that's where our people sit at the moment. So to the point around my role and what I do, it's around making people uncomfortable, and I have very much pleasure doing that, and appropriately so. And I was with, had the pleasure of spending some time with our CEO the other day, who's an amazing person, and gave him a bit of a heads up that on Monday, come Monday, perhaps he might be on the end of some emails around things that I've said. So safe space, everyone, drink some more wine. You'll forget about it. But look, at Fonterra, we have been measuring, for example, gender and ethnicity. And we have some targets around 50-50 gender balance in our senior leadership, so senior global leadership, and 20% ethnicity, again, globally. Our scoreboard of our targets shows us that we have not shifted for at least the last 5 years. So I take your point, Sean, that it's complex, but I will tell you, if you are a person of colour, or are you a woman, or you're a person that might fit outside the things that we're trying to measure, the complexities of every single second when you don't have a voice at the table, or actually you do have a voice, but somebody next to you says the same thing 10 minutes later and everyone around the table goes, wow, wow, man, that's amazing. And you're like, I just said that. I just said the exact same thing. So yes, it's complex, but it's not good enough anymore. That is the principal part of my role. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Hayley. Help me. When I think of Fonterra, I think of men and farms. Is that the reality?
Well, there's two tables of fabulous, amazing women, wahine, here today. So first of all, no, it's not just all men. Secondly, yes, we, our industry, so the wider agri industry, of course, our history has predominantly, and that's the nature, part of that is, you know, the nature of the role. Tough manual work, which again has typically been associated with males. But again, I think probably COVID has done a great job in, you know, busting a lot of those myths. But it will come as no surprise to every single person in this room that actually our global population is made up of 50% women and 50% men. These are just historic conditioning, primal gender stereotypes at play that keep us this way. And that's the primary reason. And again, it's just not good enough. We're kind of over it. And that's a good thing.
And it's shifting, isn't it? I mean, we're getting technology a lot more in milk sheds, so there's no reason why that we can have
more females. And again, our industry is shifting, but not fast enough. And what that represents is a missed opportunity from having not only all of the voices in the room, but the space to talk as well. Because I think it's one thing to have places around the seat, and all of us in the room, particularly the woman, will go, oh my gosh, I've made it to the table. But again, that space. So for anyone that is in positions where you're kind of grappling with this, and again, the fact that we can grapple and find these sort of things complex to pick apart is typically indicates that you're in a great place yourself. But give up the space as well. Awesome. You know, when you are wanting to kind of say the same thing, or you've just heard somebody, particularly a female, share her view, don't feel the need to say the same thing or kind of say, that's a good another take. Just share the space. Give it up.
Awesome. Away with you, Zoe.
Kia ora koutou, ko Zoe, toku ingoa. My name is Zoe and I live in Tamaki Makaurau with my partner and two little kitties. My ancestors came a long way back from Scotland, so I just want to acknowledge that this is my home, but this is not my land, and to acknowledge mana whenua and tangata whenua. So like Rachel said, I am the co-director of All Human, and we do what it says on the tin. We work with organisations to help them foster a sense of belonging and well-being and recognise that everyone is human and we all need support and to be well and to belong. My background is mostly working around gender equity, so the focus, as well as working around belonging and well-being for everyone, is working on supporting and fixing organisations rather than fixing women, because I've heard throughout my career, you know, well, just set up a leadership course and get them to go on it, or, you know, they haven't worked hard enough to try and rise in their career, or they didn't ask for the pay rise, so of course they shouldn't get it. And that is BS, right? It's organisations and the structures which are the problem, not the individual woman. So not to be too negative, but we work with organisations because there's a lot of things that need to happen within organisations to make sure that policies and processes and culture is in place so that everyone can thrive and feel well and belong. The other thing that I do is I sit on the Auckland District Health Board. About 5 years ago, I looked at the board and as with most boards in Aotearoa, I thought, wow, there's a lot of old white men on that board. So I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to give it a go. So I put my hand up and it worked, surprisingly. It's been a massive roller coaster and a learning experience for me. I've got to work with the most amazing people within the healthcare sector. And what I've learned along the way is that it's so important as a business or an organisation to focus on equity for so many different reasons, for a business case, but also as the right thing to do. So we do a lot of work around institutional racism. We do a lot of work around recruiting diversity, but more focused on retention than recruitment, because as a lot of organisations do, they get diverse people in, but then people don't feel like they belong, so they leave. So yeah, I'm here today to talk mostly about belonging and well-being, but also how diversity and inclusion weaves its way through that.
Great. Okay, so first question I've got for Anahira. How do you think Māori, iwi, tribes are perceived in the corporate industries, and what do they bring to business?
Yeah, that's a cool question. I think I would like to think that we are perceived to be innovators, and worthy of being at these tables and having these conversations. Unfortunately, you know, I don't think that that's really the way it is. I mean, not many people knew that we owned all that land. That's one of four of the largest precincts in Auckland, on the Auckland waterfront. You know, so why you didn't know that? I don't know. But I think that's, you know, those are sort of things that I often think about. How can someone that owns the largest tract of land, and we live 5 minutes east on Tāmaki Drive, how do people not know that we're there? So I think that's something that we could all ask ourselves about, how we engage with, wherever you are, if you're based in Wellington, how you engage with tangata whenua and how you engage with the local tribes, because we're going through this process right now. Like Hayley said, she was on her post-settlement governance entity around treaty settlements, where tribes don't usually get cash. You know, we have to either buy it back, get a loan, or we get a small portion of land that was lost and taken. So for us, we actually bought that land. So people think we got given it. No, we bought it. Just like we bought 20 hectares of land on the North Shore that we are developing as a residential property developer over there. Did anyone know that? Oh, two, four. That's great. So I think when you think about tribes, you know, it's not a scary thing. I honestly believe that iwi are the best partners you could have. You know, we have the ability to transform. We understand our people. I know we've got 5,550 people registered to Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, so they whakapapa there. I know about 800 of them because they're my neighbours. And so when you think about the way that we're able to engage with our people, it's in a very specific whānau type of way. We understand, and actually the lens that we share is very similar. So, you know, I get home some days from work, and not only are my three kids sitting on the couch, they've got their six cousins there eating me out of house and home, and they're between 5 and 10. You know, and I think these are the types of things, this is the way that we live, and these are the types of things that we try and foster amongst our communities and our families, because it is absolutely important that our kids feel safe and they feel like they belong in this very busy town, this city that doesn't really look like them. You know, we have to work really hard to build their confidence. I grew up not really speaking Māori. I lived in Ōrākei my whole life, but the language was never around. We had about one or two of my kaumātua that could actually speak Māori.
When did you discover your identity? When did you get that heart connection with it?
Well, I always knew that it was there, but I think the point is that all those things were taken away. So that when you go through a process of rebuilding your communities, like the way we have, where my house is a Māori-speaking house. All my children speak te reo Māori. All my cousins speak te reo Māori. So we've gone through this generational shift because we believe that within our culture and our language and our community that we have the answers to send our people forward and empower our people to move forward in a way that they should, because this is their home.
That's so beautiful.
Rachel, I was just going to add, I think when you think of Māori as well, think of it as a really broad concept, because where my tribe is, we don't have a viaduct. We have a viaduct, but it's a river. We don't have a Mission Bay. We certainly don't have a Victor Arena in Te Kuiti. But the point I'm trying to make is we can be all of the things as well. And as the demographic of New Zealand changes, Tamaki Makaurau, so Auckland will do that. New Zealand, so Aotearoa, in 2038 we will have a minority-majority population made up of Māori, Pacifica, Asian immigrants, and what a beautiful thing that will be. So if you are thinking around how this might work out for you, lean in with compassion, be brave, be courageous, but also kind of get comfortable with the fact that there isn't one sense of Māori. In fact, we are all of the things, and we can be all of the things. There'll be some common themes around, you know, aroha, whānau. You know, all of us will have kids that bring these kids home that you're like, those are not my kids, go feed your own kids. or like my girl, I used to say to her, can you go to your friend's house and eat their food too? But my point is, like, get really comfortable with the fact that Māori is a really broad concept. So it's not one thing, it's not two things, it's like 10,000 things. And that's just my tribe alone, and my family, a lot of split personalities, so kia ora.
I've got my own tribe, three boys, I hear you. Zoe, what's a pulse check?
So, random, but so a pulse check, I guess, is something that we often suggest to organisations when they're first starting out or first come to us and say we want to do some work around belonging and wellbeing. So a lot of organisations do an annual survey, which is great, getting feedback from their people, but a pulse check can go that step further. And I know a lot of organisations are already doing this and doing it very effectively, but it's really important when you're starting out on this journey, or even if you're, you know, some of the way through your diversity and inclusion or belonging or wellbeing journey, that you listen to your people. So you get feedback from your people. So a pulse check is just a really quick and simple survey that you send out to them around a specific topic. So I'd ask your people, how do you belong to this organisation? Do you feel like you belong? What are the ways in which you feel like you belong or don't belong? If you can imagine an organisation that you work for where you feel like you truly belong, what would it look like? And what would it look like for your peers as well? So making, you know, people think about themselves and their colleagues as well. So that's what a pulse check is. There are some great organisations out there that do them every sort of 2 months or so on different topics. And although that sounds like a lot of asking people, it really, really is the case of the more you ask, the better the organisation is going to be. So you get that feedback. People feel listened to, feel heard, feel loved. And then as long as you act on some of the things that you're asking, that is going to lead to positive change. It's going to lead to belonging. It's going to lead to wellbeing.
Wonderful. So, Sean, with a corporate lens, why is inclusion and diversity important?
Yeah, I think context, to give some answers some context, my daughter asked what I was doing today and I explained, and she's 10, and she was, why do you need to go speak about this? So I put it back to her and I was like, well, why do you ask that question? And her response was, you know, we have a female prime minister, we have a deputy leader who's female, our head of state, you know, she said governor general's female. And then I layer in the Supreme Court has more females than males. So decision making at a kind of meta level and through my daughter's eyes is got balance. So she's going, why? And then when I layer in the corporate piece, it's very different. It's really different. And so as a father, I think that is a terrible place to kind of bring my children into when I have a son and a daughter, because they should have equal opportunity. So that's just kind of the moral piece for me. But then there is actually, and I'm not going to apologise, all the research in the world that says more diverse teams make better money. Harvard, BCG, to name a few, decision making is better with greater diversity. A female CEO actually drives more bottom line profit. This is all fact-based, right? So we need more balance, we need better representation across all layers in an organisation, because guess what? We're going to make more money. And it's socially the right thing to do, because I'm a dad and I want my son and my daughter to have equal opportunities in life.
Yeah, it's about paving the way for a better future for our kids, right? Zoe, I'm going to change now. You've shared some amazing stories about some companies who are doing amazing in this space. Please share some examples, name some companies, tell us what they're doing and, you know, how they grew towards that target.
Sure. I think it's Fonterra and Chorus.
Do you work with them for some reason?
I have worked with both these organisations in the past in a different role, and I can hand to heart say they are doing very well in this space.
Otherwise, what are they doing well?
Yeah, right. They have targets and they have extremely good data, and I think that good data, I think Sean already said this, but is absolutely key to then stepping forward in terms of diversity and inclusion and belonging. I think it's also important to say that it's a journey, right? And no organisation is perfect. Everyone's got to start somewhere. And I think a really good example of that, although Westpac are doing... Is Westpac here? No.
Oh, you can say what you
Hello.
Want.
Yeah. So I think Westpac are a great example because they, although we're already doing some wonderful stuff, they came out last year and said, we have this huge gender pay gap. And I think a lot of organisations are afraid of saying, look, we've stuffed up, we're not doing so well in this space. But actually, what they've got from that is a whole lot of people connecting with them and going, oh, yes, you're human. Oh, you're making mistakes. Oh, you're on a journey. And for them to come out and admit that both makes them seem more human but also holds them accountable, right, so that they then make sure that they're going to put things in place to reduce that gap. I know that Yellow are here, somewhere at the back there. They are doing some fabulous work around the diversity and inclusion space. And I think it all comes back to admitting you're on a journey, getting that good data, speaking to your people, asking what your people want, and then doing what they say. It's not simple. It's actually very complicated. But if you start with those kind of basic steps, that's going to get you a lot of the way forward.
What's a tangible, real thing that Yellow are doing that's exciting that we can learn from, that we could look at? What's a real idea?
What are you doing, Yellow? they measure their data. They are measuring their pay gap. They are making sure that they are actively recruiting for diversity. And so if a new position comes up. I'm sorry to speak for you. It feels a bit strange. But if a position comes up or if someone leaves, they proactively push and say, we want a diverse candidate for this role. And as well as focusing on recruitment, they then make sure from their culture and the way that they work that they retain people because the culture is good. It's inclusive. People feel welcome and people feel like they belong.
Great.
Can I just make a comment on the gender pay gap stuff? Because it's a good marker, but be careful in terms of how you approach it. And I'll happily share what we've just done at Chorus. So there's some data points on it. We've got a gender pay gap. So our board set aside in a year where no one got any pay increases, $500,000 to actually look at the gap. And we looked at like for like first. So people in the same roles and used the proxy of performance, not tenure. And we spent $300,000 to right-size it. It's actually against the law to pay people in an equitable way, right? It's been that way since 1972. It's not that we were not paying them abruptly differently. It was more about same performance, why are they not earning the same amount of money? 60% female got right-sized, 40% male got right-sized. So it goes both ways. Didn't shift the pay gap. So we did more, we spent another $200,000 and we started looking across and didn't shift the pay gap. What was creating the pay gap was an imbalance in senior roles. So we had more men earning more money. So gender pay absolutely is against the law and has been so since 1972 to not actually do that. But when you start to get underneath it, if you're just measuring at a corporate level that there's a gap, that's you can resolve it, but it won't solve it.
Welcome to the M2 Women podcast. This episode is from our M2 Women Journey to Excellence live forum, held on the 20th of November 2020. It's brought to you by Adashiko, Piper Heidsieck, and Polynesian Spa.